The third case on our docket is number today is number 06-1157, Omega Healthcare against ResCare. Mr. Fisher.
Honorable judges, we believe that the district court was right in concluding that this was a summary judgment issue, but entered summary judgment for the wrong party. The most valuable asset that is possessed by an ICFMR facility is its Medicaid certification. Its value is based upon the number of certified beds that it has and its ability to provide that limited service. Because of that, the owners, like my client Omega, go to great lengths to protect that certification, and we believe did so in this case. The Medicaid certification was acquired by Omega when they acquired the facility. They purchased it separately from the facility, but from the individuals to whom it had been granted. When they entered into a lease for the operation, they didn't lease a building, they leased a business. And the lease makes it very clear that they are leasing a business, not just a building. It describes the demise premises to include the real estate and all the rights attendant to the operation of that real estate. To make it extremely clear what they are leasing, there's even a provision in the lease which indicates that if the Medicaid certification rules change, that's grounds for requiring the renegotiation of the lease rentals.
Now, Mr. Fisher, I would appreciate it if you could focus us on what in the lease itself, apart from its references to the management agreement, create duties on the part of ResCare to do anything, basically, to run this as the kind of facility for the disabled that it was. Your argument really hinges, I guess is the other way I can put this, on paragraph 23 and the what you allege is the incorporation of all the particular duties and responsibilities in the management agreement somehow into the lease.
Yes, 23 does do that, and 25 specifically makes any breach by either party of the terms of the management agreement also a breach of the lease.
But you see, that I'm not sure that helps you so much because, you know, I've got all of this marked, and I don't see how I guess the part that seemed to me relevant is, notwithstanding, this is on page 22, appendix page 40, the parties agree that notwithstanding any other provision of this lease, the term default as used in this lease will also include the termination, either voluntary or involuntary, of the management agreement or the occurrence of an event of default. Well, when the management agreement becomes superfluous, when ResCare takes over what Mr. Petrie, after his after he passed away, then I don't see why there isn't just a default under the lease. That means there is no lease anymore.
There's a couple of problems with that theory, Your Honor. One of them is that the management agreement does not become superfluous merely because of a change of the ownership of the license. This is a facility that still needs to be managed, and it needs to be managed now not for the not for Mr. Petrie, but for Omega, who steps into Mr. Petrie's shoes.
Well, I don't know why it's Omega who steps in Mr. Petrie's shoes, and I guess I find a dearth of written language in either the lease or anything else, side letters, anything, that spells out what you describe as a very pragmatic thing, but I guess your opponents argue that you never sort of wound up crossing the T's and dotting the I's on it.
I'm not sure what T's or I's you're referring to, but I would draw your attention to provision 23, and particularly the last part of that provision, which deals specifically with the question of what happens if Mr. Petrie defaults on the lease. And what happens is he's simply removed and is substituted, Omega is substituted into the management agreement. The last paragraph or last sentence of number 23 says, upon an uncured event of default, the parties acknowledge that lessor may direct the manager to proceed to perform under the terms of the management agreement, dealing with lessor as an assignee of lessee, which rights shall include payment of all sums due under the management agreement. The effect of that provision is that if there is, in fact, a breach, as you indicated, would occur by the termination or attempted termination of that agreement, then we would substitute Omega for Petrie in the management agreement, and the management agreement would continue in force and continue to be enforced by the owner, who, of course, is the one who has all of the interest in it being managed and operated in a way that does not destroy its Medicaid certification. But in addition to these provisions, which deal specifically with the management agreement, there are other provisions in the lease which prohibit the types of actions that took place. For example, because the demised premises is defined to include the rights that are pertinent to the property, and those rights would include the certified beds, the provision that says that you may not alter the demised premises would prevent you from altering it by destroying those rights.
Isn't that fairly stretches the language pretty far to include the certification here, doesn't it, really?
I don't think so, because demised premises is defined to specifically include those rights.
Well, it says appurtenances, but in normal law of real property, an appurtenance wouldn't be a movable, like a bed, or like, you know, the carpets on the floor or anything else. It would be a very idiosyncratic. Indeed, there's another paragraph about tangible personal property.
True, but we're not talking, I'm sorry, we're not talking about a tangible personal property. We're talking about a right, Medicaid certified right. And the item, while it's labeled appurtenances, also does talk not just about appurtenances, but all tenements, hereditaments, rights, privileges. And those rights and privileges certainly include the right to operate as a certified bed in that facility. There is also a provision, which is Section 8, which requires compliance with all laws necessary for the compliance with laws concerning all laws, rules, orders, ordinances, regulations. And it goes on to say, from any municipality having jurisdiction over the demised premises or the franchises and privileges connected therewith. Now, that implies that you may not violate the Medicaid rules, and as a result of the violation of Medicaid rules, destroy that right, which is part of what's leased here.
You know, the word violation, though, is not a good fit for what ResCare did. They didn't violate anything. They went to the state. They went to Medicaid. They got permission for everything they did. That's not usually what we call a violation. Well, it's not like they failed to comply with the fire code or something.
Well, in a sense, they did, because what they ended up doing is they abandoned the facility.
But that wasn't an illegal act from the point of view of the state authorities. It may have violated contractual arrangements between these parties, but it wasn't a violation of any law, rule, or ordinance.
It was a violation of the certified bed obligations. Once they abandoned it, because they had abandoned it, those rights were extinguished.
Well, but
and
that's
they were extinguished
not a violation.
Essentially as a penalty for having failed to continue to operate.
It's not a violation, though. There's nothing in the law that says once you have a certified bed, you are bound for all eternity to keep that certified bed.
Now, that's certainly true.
To give it up and exchange it for other rights.
That's certainly true, Judge. And I will admit that these are not the provisions of the contract that are most directly relevant. The most directly relevant provisions are 23 and 25. Those provisions which say that this management agreement is so important that it is incorporated by reference, it's made a part of the agreement, any breach by either party to it is a breach of the contract, any termination of it, even involuntary termination of it, is a breach of the contract, and if that contract is breached by Petrie, we are allowed as Omega to step in to make sure that we continue to have and can enforce those rights directly.
But why didn't you do that when ResCare took over and you gave your consent to ResCare's action? Omega could have done things that it didn't do at that time.
Well, I'm not sure what Omega needed to do at that time.
It could have stepped in and said, we are now the person who's going to perform all the terms of the management agreement.
Well, we didn't have
obligation. We now have a new contract, in effect, with ResCare.
There was no reason to write a new contract with ResCare. ResCare continued to be bound under the existing management agreement. There is no reason for the management agreement to have been declared to be terminated. All that happened was that the license was purchased from Petrie.
But the district court cited, I think it was a really old decision, but anyway, cited case law from Kentucky that said if A and B are in a contract, and then B buys out A's rights, there isn't a contract anymore. You need something else that would bind B to C.
I think that gets to the problem that the judge had in failing to recognize that the complaint alleged breaches of the lease as well as breach of the agreement.
No, I don't think the judge failed to recognize. I mean, the judge didn't cite the lease. You certainly did mention the lease. You're unequivocally right about that. But just let's stick with this hypothetical. A and B have a contract. That contract helps C. Maybe C is a third-party beneficiary, maybe not. We'll worry about that. But if B buys out A's interests, then you don't have a contract according to this state law decision that the district court. There's no longer a need for B to promise itself that it's going to perform certain functions.
Well, the problem in that analysis is C. This is a contract between A, B, and C, not just between A
well,
and B.
Well, if it is, if C is a third-party beneficiary, then B's assumption of the former duties of the contract may well run to C, but I think that's the analytical framework you need to work with.
I don't think they're limited to being a third-party beneficiary. I think the terms of these contracts are so interrelated and interconnected that they are three parties to a single contract. But the restatement of contracts would not agree with you that A and B have a right to terminate a contract if there is a third-party beneficiary out there who has enforceable rights to that contract. And that is also cited in our brief, and also a reason why, in this case, A being Petri's estate and B being ResCare, could not get together to destroy C's, Omega's, rights. Even if we were only a third-party beneficiary, the restatement doesn't permit two parties to do that where there's a contract with enforceable rights to a third person. I see my white light is on. I'll reserve my time, please.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Tatchell.
May it please the court, Mr. Fisher, my name is David Tackaw. I represent ResCare Health Services and ResCare, Inc. This case has had a lot of procedural twists and turns, but it really is as simple as Omega failing to offer proof of the essential elements of a contract claim. It is, as Judge Wood indicated, that Omega failed to cross its T's and dot its I's. And the district court was exactly correct in granting summary judgment. The court was justified because it properly held the management agreement had expired, and thus no default or breach of that agreement could occur. And Omega also offered the court no specific facts under the summary judgment requirements for Rule 56 as to any breach of the Accepticon lease. In fact, in the argument today, the court has still not offered any facts of how the Accepticon lease was breached.
Could I ask you then to focus, as Mr. Fisher was asking us to focus, on the last sentence of paragraph 23 in the lease, because under paragraph 25, you can certainly read the termination, as you argue it was, of the management agreement by ResCare's purchase of Petri's, I'll call it the Petri interest. It's okay, the management contract has terminated. That's defined as an event of default. And then this last sentence says that the lessor, that is to say Omega, may direct the manager to proceed. Well, the manager has to mean ResCare at this point, since Petri's out of the picture, under the terms of the management agreement. So that brings in, doesn't it, all of the obligations of the management agreement without an additional writing.
Your Honor, there are at least two points I want to make in response to your question. First of all, we have not argued that the management agreement expired. What we have argued is that as a matter of law, the management agreement became null and void, and that's what the district court said.
But why does that matter under the language of paragraph 25, which says
that's exactly why.
The termination, either voluntary or involuntary. So we're just playing with the words. Termination is a word that means it ended. You know, whether it expired, whether it folded into itself, or whatever it did, it was no more.
I think it's not playing with words. You may obviously, there's obviously an argument for that, but it goes back to the Kentucky case that you were referring to in your discussion with Mr. Fisher. If the Swiss Oil versus Grigsby case talked about this, or Rigsby case, talked about how if you have an obligation, you're paying lease payments on a building and the building burns down, you no longer have lease payments due. It's not that the lease terminated in the sense of somebody came along and said, we terminate the lease. What happens is the purpose of the contract, the subject matter of the contract, no longer has reason to exist. And that's what happened in this case. So our argument actually would be that the first clause in Section 25 doesn't come into play. It was not argued by Omega in the district court that it came into play. And that's why I think the terminology makes a difference. But I understand your point. The broader picture is, as far as we're concerned, because the management agreement no longer existed, and because Omega specifically consented to the assignment of to RestCare of the lease, then the management agreement, because it no longer existed, meant that those obligations that were folded in through Section 23 no longer could become defaults.
But what's your view of RestCare's relationship with Omega once all of this happens? I mean, it seems to me you're in the somewhat odd position of saying you could have, you know, you could have opened a restaurant in there. You could have done anything because with no management agreement, you were just the people who were doing something inside the building. And you have a vision, despite paragraph 23 of the lease, that the management agreement just sort of vanished into thin air.
Your Honor, that was why I appreciated the question to Mr. Fisher. This was really Omega's fault. And Omega's now blaming the district court, or Omega's blaming RestCare, but Omega had the responsibility and had the ability to insist before it allowed an assignment of the lease that no new lease would be entered into, or that RestCare was going to have to reaffirm the lease, the management agreement requirements. Our position is perhaps it is as broad as you've suggested, but the fact of the matter is, if Omega wants to sue for breach of contract, Omega had the responsibility of making sure those obligations were in existence at the time of the alleged non-performance, and those obligations were not in existence. It's not only that, though, that Omega has itself to blame and not RestCare and not the district court. That was all before the lawsuit got filed. Then when the lawsuit got filed, Omega did not plead in the original complaint, the first amended complaint, the second amended complaint, or the third amended complaint, any of the specific lease provisions that had been violated by RestCare. When the cross motions for summary judgment were filed, of course, what Omega initially did was Omega stated to the court, to the district court, that the alleged agreement, the assignment of the rights under the lease, was reached without permission from Omega. They told the district court it was done without permission from Omega, and that wasn't true. In fact, Omega itself, to serve its own interests, had filed administrative proceedings in Kentucky as part of trying to establish a chain of title. And Omega itself had argued that, in fact, it had consented to the assignment of the lease. So Omega is now stopped from denying that they never gave permission, and that's what the district court said. So that was the second problem for Omega in the district court, was they initially said, well, we never allowed the assignment of the management agreement, and that wasn't true. When the district court said it's not true, summary judgment gets granted, Omega then could have done yet another thing that it didn't do, that it now wants to blame everybody else for. It could have sought to amend its complaint again. It didn't seek to amend its complaint. Instead, it's filed some collateral action out there, which perhaps is some form of judge shopping, or perhaps it's trying to get yet another bite at the apple, and it invites you in its brief to say, well, because of this other action, it really doesn't matter what you guys do. And we believe it does. We believe that it is important for this court to affirm the district court and to affirm the procedures of summary judgment, because in this instance, Omega never did identify facts that would involve a breach of the lease, and it's not for the district court to have to go searching through the record to try and figure out, well, was there anything in the record that might have constituted a breach of the lease?
Would you remind, for some reason I can't remember what the other action is that you're talking about.
The other action was cited to the court in a complaint that was attached to the appellant's reply brief, and complaint is there. Perhaps I can supplement and respond to your question by letter if you'd like. This was a separate action that was filed by Omega, or Mr. Fisher may be able to identify this more quickly than I can. I think that this, I'm not sure I can identify it here. Perhaps I can by a supplemental letter. This is a separate action, though, that was filed after the motion for summary judgment was by Omega was denied, the motion for summary judgment by ResCare was granted, and then while the motion to reconsider was being litigated, Omega filed a separate action in the district court in Indiana, which has been stayed pending further proceedings.
Okay.
But I must say it bothers me that I can't put my hands on
it. No, don't worry about it. From my point of view, you can file a letter.
I want to finally close by discussing the public policy that's at issue here and the reason why we also believe that the public policy of Kentucky should prevent enforcement of the lease provisions that at least have been alleged by Omega.
Well, before you get into that, I mean, I think I'm familiar with this court has seen plenty of cases about the evolution of thinking about care for disabled people over the years. I just wonder what comment you would have on Omega's statement that your action in moving everybody out, let's even assume you did it very kindly, but moving everybody out of this facility means that its ability to use it for its original intended purpose has now been destroyed. They're going to have to start all over again, square one, aren't they, to get a new certificate of need or a Medicare certification. If they want to,
there actually is a real paucity of evidence in the record on that, despite the initial comments in the appellant's argument. There is no real clear record about exactly what will have to be done, but I think that it's probably fair to state that there would have to be a certificate of need. And as a matter of fact, to be completely candid, federal regulations are not going to allow backfilling of large ICF MRs anymore, precisely for the public policy reasons we were talking about.
Is this the kind of facility that could be converted into an apartment complex or whatever? I mean, I assume people live there, right? Or
it is a facility. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It is a facility that Omega has sold and that housed a number of people, and depending on what construction was done, could be used for other purposes. Yes, ma'am. The fact of the matter was it was Omega's responsibility to be careful to be sure that it would continue to generate the kinds of revenues they wanted to, and they didn't take those steps to ensure their position. They now have a building that has been sold by them and can be used for other purposes, yes. What I did want to respond to that showed up in the reply brief was there is no evidence in the record that what ResCare did was actually evict people. The cited deposition excerpts that are from the Medicaid commissioner in Kentucky, Dennis Boyd, and from a ResCare employee named Pat Kelly, what they talk about is how ResCare did, as the courts indicated, work carefully not only with state officials but with the Independent Protection and Advocacy Office, which also talked with all of the residents, their caregivers, and the families in order to reach decisions about what those individuals wanted. And only a small handful, I mean, Pat Kelly talks about four people out of 180 did not want to go to community-based housing. 176 people out of the 180 wanted to be in a situation where they could wake up in the morning and make their own coffee, mow their own lawns. Two dozen of these people came to the district court in September of 1999 when Omega had filed and was seeking to enjoin them from leaving Accepticon. Two dozen people came up to the court and were talking about, there wasn't testimony taken, we're talking about how they wanted to make their own coffee, ride down the street, meet their neighbors, and go over to their brother and sister's houses in their home communities to watch a ball game instead of just being able to do that once or twice a year. Fortunately, because of the work of the state officials, because of the work of RescCare employees, that was allowed to happen here. And that's the fundamental public policy concern behind our lawsuit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tacko. Fisher has how many minutes? 3 minutes.
There are 3 points that I wanted to make that I don't think have been touched upon at this point. One of them, the first has been a little bit. One of two things has to have happened. Either this management agreement is still in force, because certainly there is a need to continue to manage this property, and the provisions of the contract provided that Omega stepped in the shoes of Petri. If that agreement's still in force, then RescCare is liable for breaching that agreement. If that agreement isn't enforced, if it did terminate for some reason, then Petri is in breach of that lease because of the provision that makes it a breach of the lease to terminate, even involuntarily, the management agreement. And having accepted the assignment from Petri, that means that RescCare is now liable for Petri's violation of the lease by allowing the termination of the management agreement. The end result is the same. Whether they breached the lease by breaching the management agreement, which is still in force, or they breached the lease by terminating the management agreement, either way, we should be entitled to summary judgment for the damages resulting from that event. The second thing that hasn't been talked about is a court order. We had a contract that required that they return the premises to us at the end of the lease, and they didn't do it. Instead, they got the court to agree to an order, which we agreed to, which allowed them a holdover period. But the specific order said, you will not use that holdover period to destroy Omega's rights. That's exactly what they did. During the holdover period, they emptied the facility. Having emptied the facility, they now went to the state and said, the facility is empty. That means that the license is forfeit because it's been abandoned. And the license was then forfeited and terminated. So we have a violation of the court order that we attempted to preserve our rights and protect our rights with that's not been addressed. The last thing I want to mention is the economics. This building's worth, according to the appraisers, as a certified Medicaid-certified ICF MR, about $6 million. It was sold for $500,000 after we were unable to find anyone to buy the building or anyone with an interest in it without that Medicaid certification. Our appraisers have also indicated the value of the business that RescCare acquired by virtue of terminating those rights and transferring that funding to the community-based business was worth about $8 million. Our property goes down in value by $6 million and their business goes up in value by $8 million, and we think that's wrong. We think that's wrong because they've taken rights that belong to us, violated and breached their contracts, and this is not about public policy. This is about money. As the president, Mr. Geary of RescCare, said, there's a pot of money out there, and this is all about who gets to control it. And the person who gets to control it is the person who is the last occupant, last provider of services in the ICFMR before it closes, who now has all those relationships and can pretty much guarantee that all 180 of those residents are now going to become their customers in the highly competitive community service area. That's what this was about. It's about having the last person to have control of the facility, to have influence over the residents, to then convert what was a $6 million business belonging to Omega into an $8 million business now belonging to RescCare. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.